Well, I'm Dave, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
I was going to wear a tie tonight, and I tried to, and I said, hell no, I can't do it. You know, I gained a little weight. I got to get a new shirt. You know, that's one of the problems I have. I like to eat, but that's not why I'm here tonight. You know, it is interesting, though, that I used to drink, and when I was drinking, I didn't eat much. And I don't know what that's all about, but maybe it's because one time in the, I drank mostly in the Navy, and I fell asleep in my soup, and they 86'd me. So, you know, that's part of my story, so I don't want to get ahead of myself. But I am Dave, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm very glad to be here tonight. And I probably wouldn't be here except I got short notice, and I usually work on short notice real good, you know. If I get a chance to think about it, I'll be darned if I can't talk myself out of things, and that includes speaking. But tonight's kind of special to me because tomorrow I'm going to take off and go down to Long Beach with my daughter, and then Monday I got to go into the UCLA hospital, and they're going to do a little tweak job on my heart. And, you know, I'm one of these guys that believe in signs, and today there was a miracle. UCLA beat USC. I'm sorry, USC, but since I'm going down there, I figure, well, all those guys will be in good spirits because they won. So, you know, I don't know about you, but I take all the help I can get today. But I'd like to start out by telling you that I grew up in a Bible Belt in the Midwest. Of course, Indiana, I think they call it the East now. Everything changed geographically or what. But back then, we were considered part of the Midwest, and all you folks hadn't moved in there yet. They still had pig farms and cornfields and things like that. And my dad was a country preacher, and I was raised around sawdust and hellfire and brimstone. And, man, I could tell you some stories that raised the hair on the back of your neck. Boy, those guys could really burn it, you know. But, of course, as a kid, I used to have nightmares about falling into hell because I always thought they were coming after to come and get me. I must have missed the message there somewhere. I always seemed to get the negative side, not the positive side. And, you know, I took my first drink at 17, and it's interesting that I had a good childhood. I had a loving family, but, you know, tragedy hits sometimes. It just happens. And my mom got sick, and they sent me off to military school. And I spent most of my high school years at military school and some of my grade school years there. And I changed. Something happened. I got broke inside. And anyway, I had my first drink at military school. And it's interesting. It was a night of the military ball. And at the time, I was a senior cadet there at the military school. And I was supposed to be at that dance that they had, the military ball, and I didn't go. I was in my room alone, feeling sorry for myself, because the girlfriend I had went to the dance with somebody else, a woman's involved. Nothing personal, girls. That's part of my story, though. My mom, you know, losing my mom. I seen it later on how it all tied together, but I don't deal well with rejection. I have trouble with it even today. But I understand it a lot better than I couldn't understand it back then. And so anyway, the custodian, they called them janitors back there, he's coming down the hall. And I knew this guy drank because he'd come in on the weekends when I was there and drunk, and I'd hit him up for change so I'd get the soda or something out of the machine. And he was a nice man, but he was a drunk. He went and got me a couple of bottles of beer, and there I was alone in my room. And here a kid that grew up around, you know, love, and but booze wasn't part of my life or my family's for several generations. I found out later that my grandfather had been an alcoholic, but I didn't know that at the time. And anyway, I started out with two beers, and I drank the first one, and it made me sick, but I felt that warm glow going down, and I says, oh, that's great. But it made me sick, and the first thought, as a good alcoholic, and I didn't know it yet, but I was there, I said, oh my God, there must be something wrong with the beer. So I opened the other one, you know. Somebody poisoned my beer. You know, how the hell did I know? I'd never been there before. But even though I got sick, and I got drunk just on two beers, I remember the feeling. It was a rosy feeling, a feeling that somehow it's going to be all right, and all those, that poor me went away, and I wasn't sad anymore. Things changed. And I chased that for 17 years, that warm, glowy feeling. And I got it once in a while. And then it came the time where I didn't get it anymore. But I did most, I joined the Navy after I graduated from military school. And I tell you what, in the Navy, a lot of sailors drink, and they enjoy drinking. And some of them can handle it. I couldn't handle it. I remember, I don't know how many times they carried me back to the ship. You know, I married a gal, and she followed me around in the first 4 years of my Navy career. I got four kids by this woman, and she followed me around. And anyway, I got out of the Navy for a while. I didn't really like the Navy, but I didn't do well on the outside. And 18 months later, I re-upped, and I ended up spending a career in the Navy. But anyway, I chased the booze for 17 years, and I made chief petty officer. And you know, one thing I found out about us alcoholics, there's only one thing worse for us than good misfortune, is too much good fortune. And I made chief, and that gave me more time to drink. You'd be surprised how many times I'd go ashore just to get a haircut. And I wouldn't get that haircut, but I'd sure go on the beach. And anyway, that's another story too. But you know, I came to AA because I went over to check on a drinking buddy of mine, and I made a mistake. I knew he had a problem. I identified with him, and he turned himself in for treatment. And I happened to make a mistake, and I told him about myself. I says, yeah, you know, I have a little problem with drinking. Every once in a while, I think about killing myself. And you know, then people put me in the treatment center because I said that. And I went through their program, and I come out of there, and boy, I was full of it, all right, you know. And I stayed sober 58 days. Went up to Vancouver. Wow, what a Liberty port. But I stayed sober. Went to San Francisco. Wow, that's a good place to pull into port, too. You know, stayed sober. Went to Chinatown to an AA meeting. Got my 30-day chip. I come back to Long Beach, my old haunts. Okay, well, I happened to have this friend, and it wasn't my wife, and it was another lady. I was, you know, I told the wife I had duty. I lied. I went with this lady to this bar. I went the wrong place at the wrong time, the whole nine yards. And she ordered a cocktail, and without a thought, I said, yeah, give me one, too. I'd gone all this way, the program, I was trying to get it, and just for the thought, well, go ahead. I didn't even have any thought about all the problems I had, that I wanted to kill myself, that I didn't care about things. And I drank again for another 2 years, and it was hell. And some of you know about that. Some of you have gone out and come back. But something happened. Something happened while I was out there. You old-timers used to tell me about a moment of clarity. Now, why I remember that, to this day, I don't know. But every once in a while, I'd be on a drunk, and I'd be sitting in the bar, you know, waiting to be discovered. You know how that one goes, you know, trying to really look cool. And every once in a while, I'd come out of a blackout or something, and for a moment, I'd be sober, and I'd look in the mirror and see what I saw. And God, boy, I got discovered, all right. I saw me like I really was, and I didn't like it. And how I dealt with that, I'd order a double, and then they'd throw me out, so I had a lot of times I got thrown out. The worst of my drinking when we came back from Nam, I had my wife down and four children down in San Diego in Navy housing. And they were going to move them up to Long Beach. And I went and tried to get on the bus for 5 days, but it took me 5 days to catch the bus to San Diego to bring my family up to Long Beach. The first day, I went ashore, and I'm waiting for the bus, and I said, well, I'll go next door and have a drink. I went in there, and I missed the bus. Well, I'll go back again. And that's the last I remember. I was taken back to the ship by the shore patrol, and they said that somehow I got on the beach again. And the senior shore patrol officer, no, the highway patrol caught me in the middle of Pacific Gulch Highway in my dress blues and a blackout around noon. I don't remember that. They took me back to the ship. And then the last time, the senior shore patrol officer there in Long Beach took me back to the ship. And he says, if you guys let this guy off this ship again, I'm going to write the whole ship up. Guess what? I didn't get off the ship. But I guess who had the watch the next day, the 8 to 12 in the morning? Yours truly. I don't know. My timing was terrible. I always end up with these terrible hangovers, and I got the first watch on a Monday morning. God, that's hell. Anyway, the captain come ashore, and he says, Chief, is there any problems with our people on Liberty last night? And he looked at me, and he shook his head. He said, never mind. he went to his cabin. Yeah, I was the trouble. I was the only one who had trouble that night. A couple of weeks later, one of the other chiefs got killed. He ran head-on into somebody over there in Long Beach, killed himself and the other driver. And most of those people in that town thought it was me because of the way I was drinking. And I walked in the bar and they said, I thought you were dead. And that, you think that would shake me up a little bit. This was a shipmate of mine, good friend, and he's gone. I kept on going. But I'll tell you what, you guys planted a seed. And I was walking over to the Chiefs Club to have a drink. It was around noon or something, I don't know. And I was walking from my ship, and I saw this dry dock, and there was no water in it. And I thought, you know, life sucks. I don't care about you guys, and I don't care about me. And I've given a good shot. And if this is all there is to life, I don't want to live anymore. I just don't want to live in this world I'm in. And it was all about me, guys. And I looked there, and I kind of stepped over there's a chain link fence around it, kind of like with chains, you know. And I crawled in between them, and I'm one hand on the chain. I started to step off into that dry dock. It's about 200, 300 feet down, no water down, just concrete. And I says, wait a minute. You know, I don't know what I get if I die. And I got scared. Here I am. I'm scared to live and I'm scared to die. You know, and what am I going to do? So, you know, I did what any good alcoholic would do. I crawled back under that fence and I went over to the Chief Club and I ordered me a double. Yeah, that's what I did. Let's go again, you know, and that's what I did. Well, I made a mistake, guys. If you don't want somebody to find out, don't tell your wife about it. I told her what I almost did, and she called the chaplain of the base, a captain over there, and he ordered me to go over and talk to this fellow over at Navy Rehab, a guy that helped start the alcohol programs in the armed forces, matter of fact, him and a doctor. Interesting scenario. Anyway, I went over to talk to this guy because I was ordered to. I walked in there with my health record. It was under the health department then, and oh, Dave, I'm so glad to see you. I'm glad you're finally turning yourself in for help. And I said, bullshit. And I threw I ain't here because I'm turning myself in. I'm in here because some captain ordered me to come over here. And I threw my health records down and stomped out of there. And I'm going down the sidewalk, and how this old coot got out of the barracks there and come out the other side. And he said, wait a minute, Dave, wait a minute. He said, I made a mistake. He's working step 10, guys. I made a mistake, I'm sorry. I thought you were turning yourself in for help. I said, no. And he says, look, he says, I really believe you want help. And he says, I'm just here to tell you that that door doesn't always swing both ways. And I'd heard that before. And I said, how do you know that I wanted help? And then he said something that changed my life. He said, Dave, I care. I care about you. And when he said that, I felt something inside. And I don't know, it's the strangest feeling. He cared. How can this old guy care about me when I don't care about me? This alcoholic, one alcoholic talking to another, he touched something inside of me. Now, I had a few more drunks after that, but I didn't know it. But I'd been touched by the love of one drunk for another. I know that today. And I think that's part of my journey back to you people. I like to tell you, oh, okay, I'll come in and turn myself in. That's a bunch of crap. I finally did come to the point where my division officer, who didn't understand, he's a young ensign, didn't understand alcoholism. I said, sir, if I screw up one more time, will you do me a favor and send me over for help? I made a commitment, a moment of weakness, I guess. Anyway, he said, chief, I don't understand this, but I'll do it. And so I come up the morning, after my last drunk, and I come up the quarters, and he took one look at me. He didn't say a word. He went down, got my health record, and said, go get him, chief. And I went over there one more time. Here I am. You guys weren't even there. You were all in groups or some dumb thing. And I said, well, screw this. And I threw my health record, that poor health record, I threw it down again. And I stomped out of there and went over and thumped the box at the chief's club. And you can sneak in the back door and you throw a little money in there and you, yeah, you know, chiefs learn how to get around things. Anyway, I'm sitting in there, the lunch crowd comes in, my old drinking buddies, they have their lunch, they go back to the ship, which I never did once I got over there. And I'm in there and it's just me and the bartender. And I said, well, I better call because I'm getting ready to run. So I called over there and a couple of chiefs come over and get me off the bar stool. And this one little short guy, ex-submariner, a little belly-robbing chief, he's in a little runt. He comes in there, I'm looking for Chief Ford, you know. And you know, there ain't nobody else in the place. And he's looking for, he's being a, well, you know, I know how to do that one. And I said, well, they send a little crap like you, a little shit like you in to get me, you know? And he looks up and he says, yeah, you're right, chief, but I brought my friend with me. And I looked over and looked over and then I looked up and then I looked up and I thought, oh, shit. You know, he had this big, tall gunner's mate with him. And I thought, you know, I think it's over. Anyway, these two guys took me over to the hospital ship with just the, two blocks away, tied up the pier right there near the chief. Everything's all set up for me. You guys worked real hard to get me set up to get me here tonight. I didn't know it, but you didn't know it either, probably. But I got over there. It's over, right? No. They got me in them pajamas, and I'm laying there in a bunk, and they're trying to detox me, and this guy over there starts shaking and flopping, and somebody hollered cold red or some horse shit, and then they're zopping this guy. And I said, man, they're dying here. They're dying, and I got to get out of here. And I got my uniform on, and I'm hauling ass. And I go down this ladder, and I said, man, I got to go to the bathroom. So I walked down this ladder, and there's a head at the bottom of the ladder. And I went in there, and there was no way out. It's a dead end. I went in there, and I passed out on the crapper. And that's how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, passed out on the crapper. And I always like to leave that part out. But my sponsor, whenever he hears the story, says, no, it wasn't exactly like that. He found me. But they were looking for me. They closed the main gate. They was getting ready to drag the bay. They thought I fell overboard. All kinds of crazies. There I am, passed out on the crapper. So I'll tell you what. That's a hell of a start in Alcoholics Anonymous. But you know what happened? There's been people in my life ever since that day. I was there and I wanted to run again a couple of days after I was detoxing. And I was eating a little better, feeling a little bit better. I'd go up on the deck on that hospital ship and I could see the lights of Long Beach. And I said, man, they're calling me. I can hear the boogie music, man. They're calling me, man. You know, they don't let me stay very long. Then they throw my ass out, but I keep trying. But I wanted to go. I wanted to go. And then and the next morning, this chief shows up. It was a long weekend. And he volunteered to take duty. He comes in and Floyd said, hey, he says, you don't seem quite right. And I said, what the hell are you talking about? He says, you know, I'm thinking maybe you're getting ready to run again. And I'm thinking, how did he know that? You know, you guys have been, you guys, I don't know how you guys know those things. And he says, well, anyway, he says, I got you a counselor, and they were going to give you this one guy. I got this other guy. So anyway, I went that next Monday, everybody come back, and I went over and met my counselor. It turned out to be that little shit that I give a hard time to, you know. They got me off the bar stool. Later on, it became my sponsor, by the way, Clarence. But anyway, Clarence wasn't a very good counselor. I'm sorry to say, he developed that later on. He got a certificate, education, everything. What he had, he'd sit in that group, and he had this big book, and he had it indexed. And I'd ask him a question. And Clarence said, wait a minute. And he'd reach under his chair, and he'd pull out this big book. And he'd open it up, and he says, here's the answer right here. And I said, bullshit. I said, I asked you a question, and here you're quoting this book you got, you know? He said, well, it's right in here. And I said, oh. I said, how in the hell can I argue with a book? I want to kind of stir it up a little bit. And it didn't work. Anyway, I found out that I had the right counselor because he finally helped me to start looking at Dave. Anyway, here I go again. I want to run, okay? I want to go over to the Chiefs Club. It's about the second or third week there. I'm feeling better. I'm a periodic anyway, and I'm beating my head up against the wall because I want to go drink. And there's two to a room. My roommate was gone somewhere. He had a spiritual experience, and I don't know where the hell he went. And I was pissed off about that, too, because where the hell's mine, you know? I didn't get one. Where the hell did he do with his, you know? How come he got one and I didn't get one? And all of a sudden I hollered, my God, I'm an alcoholic. I can't drink like other people. And I quit beating my head against the wall, and suddenly I got a feeling of quiet and peace. And I fell on my knees and cried and said, God, help me. I'm an alcoholic. I need help. And what happened? I got up and got in my bunk and went to sleep. I got a good night's sleep. I didn't know it, but I was about to have many more spiritual experiences, not exactly like that, but little ones here, little ones there. All along my life since that 3rd of September, 1971. It's been an interesting journey. And God, you know, I couldn't have told you that. And then a little later on, I'm in a meeting, and the bus took us to AA meetings, and the lady's trying to be real nice. Her name was Frankie, beautiful lady. She's greeting people at the door, and she says, well, welcome, Dave. She says, how did you get to Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, the goddamn bus brought me. You know, I'm a real friendly guy, you know. And I sit in meetings like this, and I said, these people ain't very friendly around here. What the hell? And a guy comes, he says, I said, how come you guys aren't friendly? He said, well, Dave, we kind of watch you out of the corner of our eye, and we don't know whether to shake your hand or duck. Oh, and I didn't see that until they pointed it out to me. That's how tense I was, how uptight I was. Anyway, we walked in, and I wanted to drink again. Here it comes again. And hell, I'd gone 2 weeks and doing pretty good, I thought. And I started to write some things. I started to pray a little bit and go to meetings. And the urge to drink came again. And everybody's over on this side, and I'm over there sitting by myself. Nobody, even my sailors, didn't want to sit with me. Even the sober sailors didn't want to sit with me. But here comes this old guy just shaking up a storm. And I noticed that, and he sat down just a couple of seats down from me. And I says, golly. And I says, would you like a cup of coffee? And he said, yeah, please. The meeting already started. And I remember something one of you guys said, well, if he's new and he's shaking, don't give him a whole full cup because he'll spill half of it. So I went and got him that half a cup of coffee, and I gave it to him. And he's sitting there trying to drink that coffee, shaking. And the urge to drink went away again. I'll be damned. It went away. It was only been a few more times since then that I wanted the desire to drink would come. Now, I'm a periodic. That means I didn't drink every day. But, yeah, I met a periodic, and I said, well, why do you go to meetings all the time? You didn't drink all the time. He says, well, I never know when that period's coming, when that urge to come. So I want to make sure that I got some meetings under my belt so I can deal with it. I remember what he said. You know, I remember little things like that you guys shared with me. And so I met some beautiful people. I met a guy named Booger Red, and he's a little fat guy, bald-headed guy, and he had the biggest heart I ever seen. He was a beautiful man. Booger used to come up here to Tehachapi and pick up the ex-cons and take them back down to Long Beach or whatnot and get them settled in. He'd go all the way up there to get them. He used to go up there on panels. But Booger Red had a beautiful saying. He says, when the language of the heart speaks, the heart listens. I understand that today. I understand that. You guys were speaking to me from your hearts. And you were sharing what you did, what helped you to stay sober. You know, Clarence was pretty busy, and so I got myself another sponsor in my home group. And Clarence says, that's all right. You can have more than one sponsor. And so this fellow, Bob, is here's another coincidence. This guy that I got when I got out of Navy treatment, I wanted to go ashore. I was coming up for shore duty, and I called back Washington. They said, no, you're not. You got 6 more months you got to spend at sea. And I thought, well, I didn't like that. I read the step 3 and the 12 and 12 3 times. I'm supposed to get what I want now, right? No, I got what I needed. I got a ship in dry dock that wasn't going no place for 6 months. That's one thing. Second, I had to go over and check on my jobs every day and see the progress in our jobs in the shipyard. And I had to walk by my sponsor's desk. I didn't know he worked in the shipyard. I had to walk by his desk every day to go check on my jobs. And I tried to sneak by him, and he's waiting for me. He knew I was coming. It was strange. He said, let me buy you a cup of coffee. And he'd take me, you ever have coffee in those machines? Oh, they're wonderful. But he'd take me and buy a cup of that machine coffee. Oh, God. Anyway, he talked to me a little bit. And then he talked to me again. And he took me with him to meetings. And he said, let's go to this meeting. This is a nice meeting. I want to introduce you to some people. He introduced me to so many people that after about 6 months, I could hardly go to a meeting down south there without running into another sober drunk that I'd met. The loneliness began to leave. And one day I'm sitting in a meeting and I suddenly realized that it had gone away. That hole in my gut that I experienced in the worst of my drinking had gone away. Now I've had a couple of knots in my gut, but that ain't the same thing. There's something there. And that was me shoving down anger and stuff. But the steps have helped me to deal with that too. You people have opened the door for me and allowed me to walk into a once in a while, they call it the fourth dimension. And I don't know what that's all about, but I'll tell you, it's an interesting feeling. You don't feel alone. You get, for a moment, you feel, in spite of what's going on, everything's gonna be all right. And that's a beautiful feeling to have. If you're new or nearly new, I hope you keep coming back, because this thing will work for you too if you want it. You know, my first AA meeting, and I wasn't ready to stop yet, but I knew I needed to kind of check AA out, and I wouldn't go to my first meeting. Anyway, I was down someplace. You know, my favorite thing is to be in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong person, and I'm in the Chiefs Club when I should be home with my wife and kids, and I met this lady, a nice lady, oh, nice looking lady. But she doesn't drink. Now, how do you get to first base with a chick that don't drink? Because they're way ahead of you. They got your moves covered before you move, you know. And I says, you know, how come you won't have a drink with me? And she says, Chief, I come here to dance. And she says, besides, one of these days I'll show you why I don't drink. Well, one day I come in there, I guess I was either wasn't drinking or I wasn't that bad or something. She said, come on. And I thought, aha. This is it, boy, you know. Well, she took me to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I thought I was going to make out, see. She takes me to an AA meeting. I'll be damned. So, you know, interesting things happen on the way to the wherever. So, but, you know, I look at it today. My God knows what gets my attention. He got me to that first meeting. And, you know, that lady later on became a very good friend. Some years later, when I was going through a hard time, my sponsor took me down to San Diego, and I'm in that room with them, and I look in the back of the room, and there's this lady. She got a big smile on her face, and she's just waving, big old smile. Like, Dave, you finally got it. What a feeling that was to see this lady, because she saw me kind of fall off again. But, You know, she's part of that. She's part of my life today. Floyd, the guy that came and said, you don't have to run, Dave. Floyd was one of my best friends. And Floyd and I'd go to coffee sometimes just to talk about things. He says, you know, Dave, I have this thing, and what do you think? We shared personal things together, you know, about our lives. Yeah, I've got lifelong friends today. I got to call a fellow back in Missouri. His name's Ed C. And Ed went to the World Convention. I didn't get a chance to go, but he went, and he was one of the speakers. And I called him, and I sent him a 33-year chip that I had, because he has 33 years, and he forgave me for being his counselor. Well, I thought I could counsel, so I tried that for a while in sobriety. The trouble is, you know, I look at it today, God had me in a protective environment, and the poor guys that I was supposed to be counseling, I don't know if they got any help or not, but somehow Ed got help, and he forgave me for being his counselor. So we've been friends ever since, you know. But anyway, he's going to send me a copy of his talk there, and I'm looking forward to that. And there's so many things, guys. I learned that, you know, this thing about hate, and I had a lot of hate. I had a lot of fear. The hate's gone away. Oh, every once in a while I get upset with things, or I might not like what you're doing or whatever, but that hate's gone. And things have gotten so much better. As I took this step one, I realized that without help, I wasn't going to get this thing. My second step, my thing was, I don't know, but if there is a power, I sure need some help. And somebody told me, the power, you use the group. So 2 and 3, I used the AA group for a while. But I discovered, even with those spiritual experiences, I still had my doubts. And sometimes today, I kind of have doubts about things. But then you guys come along and you show me, by your example, that this thing works. And when I took the hit list and shared it in my inventory, most of the people on my amends list were the people that were on my hit list. There's a few that weren't. But most of it was misunderstanding. Most of these people that I was angry at, hell, they were just trying to help me. And I resented the fact that they were trying to help me. And when I look back today, I review my past and I see different paths I could have taken. How many opportunities my God has shared with me to change and go another direction. And do you know tonight that we sit here in this meeting and all of us has got some paths in front of us, and sometimes we don't know which way to go. But if we stay sober, the worst thing that can happen is that we delay our spiritual growth a little bit. Because I've discovered here, in spite of making mistakes, if I stay sober, in the end it turns out okay. You see, because there's something here. Some of us call it God, some call it the power of good, some call it love, some call it the white buffalo. There's a lot of different names for this, but I one of the guys I admired and respected the most, his name was Chuck C. And somebody asked Chuck a question one time. It wasn't an AA meeting, it was a question and answer about spiritual ideas and AA itself. He was sharing his personal insight about it. He says, well, what is AA to you? What does it mean to you, Chuck? And he says, well, he thought for a minute and he says, I'm going to keep it as simple as possible. He says, to me, it's the spirit that flows from one drunk to another. You know that guy that told me he cared? He touched that thing inside of me. One thing I forgot to tell you, those drunks, those double shots and all that stuff wouldn't touch that inside of me that this guy touched. And I understand it today. I got a God touch. I love of this drunk. He touched my life. One of the most beautiful experiences I've ever had was on a Father's Day in 1974, I believe. I get my dates mixed up. And I wasn't with my ex-wife and I had separated. I was in hard times, and I went over to see my kids, and they were all sitting there on the couch, and I got to tell them all that I loved them. I'd gone to church that day, and a gal sang a song about He Touched Me, a sober member of AA, by the way, and it touched me that day. And the minister talked about, some of us, we should give thanks in the morning when we get up. We start off with thanking. Because I know how to do the otherwise. Learning how to say thanks is anticipation that he knows what he's doing and he's already blessed me because I'm awake sober. Anyway, I went to an AA meeting that night. And a speaker was a gal named Angie. As far as I know, Angie's still going. She's over at Needles, California. She speaks a lot over at the desert area. And I knew her from hearing her different meetings, you know, a little bit of her story and there a little bit of her story. But that night, it all come together. And I swear, for a moment, I felt like I'd come together. I went into the bathroom, and one of the things I've learned to do is look at that guy in the mirror. I used to couldn't look at him when I first got sober because I didn't like him. And I looked in the mirror and I got zapped. And it was the most beautiful feeling I've ever felt. And being a selfish alcoholic, I says, wow, what a feeling. And I says, I want to keep this. And so, you know, the next thing I thought, well, I got to give it away. So I come running out of the bathroom, see? I'm going to zap somebody with whatever this thing was. And I come running out of there, and I grab this guy's hand. He's trying to leave. The meeting's over. And I said, keep coming back. You know? And I tried to zap the guy. And I said, by the way, are you new? And he said, no, I got 34 years sober. Oh, God! You know, I come, God, keep putting me back down. Dave, take it easy, Dave. You're right there. Take it easy. So sometimes I get these warm fuzzies, and I don't know what the hell to do with them. And then I say, well, I'm going to figure this out. Boy, I come up with some strange things from that. Why not just say God's given you a little glimpse of his kingdom, enjoy it, and pass it on when you can. And so that's what I learned to do here with you guys. You know, I found out that, and this is me. I truly believe that I got to travel the path of an alcoholic because my dad wanted me to be a preacher, and I didn't have a calling. And I told him that. My dad threw me out of his church because I wouldn't preach to an adult class at the age of 14. He was so disappointed in me. And later on, my father came and all the way from Indiana to share a spiritual experience with me because he felt I would understand. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous opened my eyes to a lot of things. And that was the highest honor I've ever received from my father. That he believed, he says, son, you're on the right path. I believe that your calling is to help another drunk because they helped you. And you know what? That is my calling. I believe that. Now, maybe all I can do is give you guys a handshake or a word of encouragement. But you know, a lot of these little things mean a lot to us. They really do. And I'm grateful for every one of you in the room tonight. And I hope you're not too disappointed over the lady that couldn't make it here. You know, she's having a problem with her plumbing. I have trouble with my plumbing too, but I think it's a different kind. I don't like to talk about it. I'm not wearing Depends yet, but you notice I said yet. If you live long enough, you get to experience all kinds of things. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, this journey is fantastic. God allowed me to be, allowed you guys to hold a meeting tonight. And this is an old fellow that I'm quoting him. Blackie says, I'm glad you got a meeting tonight so I could come. And I haven't done this for a while, and some of you know it. I get gung-ho sometimes, and you got to tackle me and say, slow down, Dave, take it easy. And I got this ticker that's telling me, you better slow down. So we'll see how it goes. But I'll tell you, I want to say this because I love it. It ain't mine. There's a fellow named Singin' Sam, and I love that man. He was very enthusiastic. He said, we're not a glum lot. We insist upon enjoying life. And Sam used to go into these restaurants and play this honky-tonk music. He loved to listen to music. And Sam says, and he got it from somewhere, I don't know. Anyway, some of you heard it. And my AA program kind of reminds me of that. A song. My father was a singing preacher. I've heard a lot of different kinds of song, guys. The honky-tonks, and my dad sing the Lord's Prayer on a New Year's Eve, and I didn't have a dry eye. That was a long time ago. Anyway, a song is not a song until you sing it. A bell is not a bell until you ring it. And a life is not a life unless we live it. So to get this program, we have to live it. And the final thing I want to say to you tonight, that I love what Sam said, love is not in the heart to stay. We have to give it away. Thank you.